Hi, I'm Bethany.
And I'm Jonathan.
And you're listening to the Horror Hero Podcast.
And this might be a controversial hot take, but fuck Nazis. So, Bethany and I have previously discussed some of our favorite Nazi punching movies, including Indiana Jones, Inglourious Basterds, Sisu, the Becky movies. Am I leaving any off?
I actually have a letterbox list called "This Movie Kills Fascists" that I have been building.
Hell yeah.
So I mean, they're not all necessarily like punching movies, but like I threw on The Sound of Music, one of my favorite movies from childhood that definitely is anti-fascist. Jojo Rabbit, Cabaret, The Great Dictator, The Producers.
I love the producers.
So those are some of mine.
So, on a much less lighter and less controversial note, religion. We are recording this on Easter Sunday, and so I have to ask Bethany, what are some of your favorite zombie movies? Since I consider all zombie movies to be great Easter movies.
Just kind of picking out some of my favorites, I would say Return of the Living Dead, and Shaun of the Dead. I recently watched a 1930s film called I Walked with a Zombie. It is great because it's only like 75 minutes long. It has some absolutely gorgeous black and white photography, really beautiful. 28 Days Later was one of the first horror movies I ever watched, and it scared the shit out of me. But I am probably gonna rewatch it soon, in prep for 28 years later.
Awesome.
Yeah, what about you? What are some of your favorite zombie movies?
So obviously, big Romero fan, his original Dead trilogy is great. I absolutely love the Dawn of the Dead remake that Zack Snyder did. A very different movie, but he was dealing with sort of a different set of themes, but I still really like that movie. Train to Busan is a more modern one that is phenomenal. Apparently they're doing an American remake, which they shouldn't do that. That movie's perfect. There is a much smaller one that I saw, I want to say last year or the year before, called All You Need Is Blood. And it is this, it's this, I don't know, it's just this cute little movie about a kid who wants to make movies, and a meteor crashes and turns his dad into a zombie, and he has to enter into like a film contest, and it has to be a horror movie. And he doesn't like horror movies. Like, his whole thing is like he's an artist and he doesn't want to do a horror movie because it's schlocky. And so he's like, well, I have this gift that's been like thrust upon me, so he makes a zombie movie. He has his dad like chained up in the basement. It's a really fun, cute movie. I really liked it. There's some
Nice.
super bonkers stuff that happens towards the end. It's a fun one. But yeah, what have you been up to?
So I have seen Freaky Tales, which we're talking about in a little bit, three times in this last couple weeks. So clearly
I
I
take
liked
it
it
you liked
enough
it, yeah.
to go back. I saw Drop, which was fun, but not as fun as I was hoping. I watched Clue, the 1985 cult classic that I recently got a 4K shout edition of that, and so I was testing out, seeing how it was looking, and then I've been writing a lot. I finished the first draft on a short horror film this last week.
Nice. That's awesome. Can you share anything with us?
No, I don't really want to like share plot details of
Yeah.
anything I'm writing publicly, just
Yeah, you're
because,
fine. No, you're cool. Awesome. So
Yeah,
what have you been collecting? Show us your horror haul.
So I bought a brand new 4K player. So that was a lot of my haul budget for the next little bit. But I did my copy, my
Ooh, it came
Steelbook of
in.
Nosferatu finally came in. I ordered it from the UK because
Okay.
I tend to order a lot of my Steelbooks from there. But yeah, love this thing. It's gorgeous. I haven't played it yet, but should look good on my new player.
Is Canada technically Region B?
No.
No? Okay. It's still Region A.
Yeah, pretty much
Okay.
all of the, like, you do have to do a bit of reading on UK sites just to double check, but I have not run into any steelbooks so far that have been Region B. They've all been region free discs.
Okay.
So,
Well, so f also 4K discs are region free. So.
yeah, but like I bought the Barbie steelbook from the
Oh.
UK because it was not available. It like they didn't do a physical release in the US of
I
a
didn't know there was
steelbook,
one.
and I really wanted a particular cut because they did a bunch of different alternative covers in the UK. So I wanted a specific one. The Blu-ray is all region. I can confirm because I didn't have a 4K player before.
Awesome.
But
I'll
yeah.
have to see. You'll have to show that off to me sometime. I'd
Yeah, it's
really
a
like to
fun
see
one.
that.
Yeah, what about you? What have you been up to?
Well, I've had an eventful week or a couple of weeks. So last weekend I wound up in the ER. So that was fun. What's scarier than medical bills? Yeah, it was just like a routine prescription checkup, and they told me that my heart rate and my blood pressure were too high and that I couldn't leave.
Oh no.
So that's fun. hopefully we have it under control. I don't know.
Yeah.
I go in for a checkup this week and another one next
Yeah.
week. So we'll see. Gotta
Yeah.
stop drinking so much caffeine. But as far as what I've picked up, I keep talking about how each week is going to be, oh, this is going to be a light week. This is going to be a light week. Well, this actually is a light week for me because I was out all essentially last week. And so I was only able to go out this weekend, and I was able to pick up Blackula,
Nice. So,
which really goes with a movie that was released this weekend, Sinners, which is awesome. And so yeah, I had been looking for this because since I picked up Scream Blackula Scream last time. And so yeah, I'll get to watch this. And I also picked up Godzilla versus Megalon on VHS. And it's
nice.
actually a two-pack with a movie called The Snow Creature, which I have never heard of, but I love collecting all those Godzilla VHS. And then yeah, so I actually picked up Blackula when I was on my way to pick up something that I pre-ordered at 1313 Mockingbird Lane, which is a local toy store slash collectible shop slash horror boutique. I picked up this really cool Evil Dead 2-pack that I will definitely be showing off on TikTok. It's got Ash and Cheryl. I
Nice.
have like, there's a ton of Ash stuff from Evil Dead, but you don't get a lot of the other characters. So this is like the most photorealistic versions of these figures that they've done so far, and they look really cool. So yeah, I just wanted to shout out 1313 Mockingbird Lane over in Lawrence, Kansas. Terry Taylor and Liz Taylor are awesome. They're the owners. They have, if you ever come down, like this place is awesome. It is a must stop.
Nice.
So
Cool.
it's really cool. And then, yeah, as far as movies that I've been watching, I was really surprised that the hospital didn't have Netflix. When I was there, I don't know why I thought maybe they might. But they were very, very they were hurting for TV content because they had the Sci-Fi Channel and Leprechaun in the Hood was still playing, and I'm like, This was weeks ago. Why are we still showing this? And like, yeah, I just, oh, it was rough. So yeah, I watched Freaky Tales, which I had seen previously at Panic Fest, but to refresh for this episode, I just watched it, and I wound up being able to do a double feature that worked really well. I did Freaky Tales and Sinners, which, if you haven't gone to see Sinners yet, please go do that. This movie is incredible. Don't look into anything about it. Just go watch it. It kicks so much ass. It might be my favorite movie of the year so far. So I can't wait for you to see it, Bethany. But anyway,
Yes.
let us move on into our first news story of the night. So it's safe to say that we're both fairly excited for Zach Cregger's sophomore feature, Weapons, right? Well, we have a few more details thanks to Collider and the film's new viral marketing website. Now, I know we talked beforehand that both of us kind of want to go into this as blind as possible. But if the listeners want to check out, there is a website called maybrookismissing.com, and it's sort of like this, like, in-universe. There's some like Ring doorbell footage, and there may or may not be some connective tissue hinting at a connective universe to Zach Cregger's directorial debut, Barbarian.
Nice. Our next story, Tremors is back, baby. The original creators have won the rights back. So, original director Ron Underwood, writers Brent Maddock and S.S. Wilson, and producer Nancy Roberts have creative control over the franchise once again. They released a statement on their website saying, "We aren't reading outside ideas. We are discussing a return to perfection sequel and one or two more outlandish ideas featuring graboids in new settings." So, what do we think? Will they have enough money in the budget to get Reba back fighting graboids?
I mean, what is Reba doing right now? I don't know. Isn't she? She's doing some TV series, I think, on like Peacock or something.
Oh, yeah, I have no idea what she's up to currently.
I have no idea, but man, if they could get Reba back, even in just a cameo, I feel like Kevin Bacon's in the bag. But if they could get Reba back for this, that'd be pretty sick. I love the Tremors movies. My best friend B, she is a diehard Tremors fan. And yeah, like I think it's time for a Tremors legacy sequel for sure. Now, because they only got the rights to the original script, they can't really reference any of the sequels. So this would have to be like
A direct
a
sequel.
direct sequel, kind of like Halloween 2018, right?
Which is totally fine with me.
Yeah, we don't need all that convoluted, like, you know. But yeah, so let's move on. In other formerly dead but now resurrected horror franchise news, Bethany, did you see the new character posters for Final Destination Bloodlines?
Yeah, I took a quick look at them, but honestly, like I don't wanna go in expecting what all of the kills are gonna be, 'cause that's the fun of Final Destination is like how crazy and elaborate the kills are gonna be. So, yeah.
Yeah, so basically we have, you know, a couple of shots. They're called character posters, but they're really like look like they're hinting at deaths. One is like just a close up of a rake and a girl swinging. One of them is just a, you know, like a barbecue. Another is a kid jumping on a trampoline with a very sharp fence in the foreground. The only one that I actually know to be a kill in the movie is this. There's like a water glass with a shard of glass in it. If you remember from the trailer, somebody breaks a glass or something, and it falls into the ice chest,
I haven't seen
the
the
like the ice reservoir,
trailer.
and yeah. They don't do their due diligence and clean it out, so.
Yeah, I only watched the initial teaser
Okay.
with that one kill that they released, and I haven't seen anything
I think
since.
that one came up when I watched Sinners, so that might
Yeah,
have been how I
that's
saw
the
it.
one that they are. Oh, the longer one?
Yeah, the new one.
Okay, good to know. So I'll bring my eye mask and my earbuds too when I
Definitely
go see
keep an eye.
Sinners,
Yeah, definitely keep
so that
it.
I.
Keep your eyes closed because they do. I got that one, I think. I got a trailer for Him, which is Jordan Peele's new produced movie. Like, he didn't direct it. It's not one of his official movies, but he is producing it. But it does kind of have that feel of like an Us or a Get Out sort of
Well,
thing.
the naming even
Yes,
feels very
exactly.
much. Get Out is the only multi-word title he's had so far. And our final story, we got a new Toxie teaser.
Woo-woo!
Yeah, it was great. I'm really glad that it's giving us snippets, but it's not really revealing too much. That being said, I don't think I'm going to be watching any more trailers. Everything looks great.
We get a
Kevin Bacon looks like a slimy capitalist, and I love that. I'm probably most excited for Elijah Wood, but I like really do not want to know who he's playing.
He looks like the penguin. He looks like Danny DeVito's penguin.
It was, kind of the same thing with the monkey. I knew he was going to be in the monkey, but I didn't know anything more about it. And his cameo was such a delight in that movie. And I'm like, yeah, no, like I know he's in it. That's all I need to know. I've really been in love with Elijah Wood since the 90s. So, yeah. If he's in it, I'm pumped.
Yeah, I absolutely loved the teaser. It's only like a minute long. We get some shots of Peter Dinklage before he transitions into Toxie, and we get a couple of shots of Toxie. And clearly, his character Winston Goose is working for Kevin Bacon as a sanitation man, a sanitation engineer, or maybe just a janitor. But he, yeah, and it seems to be that like Kevin Bacon is running a some sort of a medical facility, right? Like he's testing a new drug, maybe.
Yeah, it feels like pharmaceutical, like it's aimed more at like the pharmaceutical industry
That's the
rather
word I
than
was
like
looking for.
the 80s version, which is more just like industry
Toxic
in
waste, yeah.
general.
So
So it's
they're
definitely
updating it,
like,
which is nice.
and it's an update that really it makes sense, but it feels like the same kind of critique of industry and capitalism for sure.
Yeah. So let's get freaky and talk freaky tales.
All right. So, Freaky Tales, directed by Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck. In 1987, Oakland was hella freaky. A mysterious force guides the town's underdogs in four interconnected tales. Teen punks defend their turf against Nazi skinheads. A rap duo battles for hip hop immortality. A weary henchman gets a shot at redemption. And an NBA All-Star settles the score.
That's a pretty great synopsis.
Yeah.
All right, so before we break this movie down, what did you think of it? Did you like it? I mean, you saw it three times.
Yeah, I loved it. You said that Sinners might be your number one of the year. Freaky Tales might be my number one of the year. It's early to call it, so like, that's with a big ol' asterisk in the corner for now, but like I don't normally love anthology type films. I normally am like, oh, there's two good segments and the rest are just kind of like there. But none of this felt like filler to me. And I think it's probably because, yeah, it's sort of an anthology, but it is the same directors for the whole thing. You have the same creative team basically writing and planning how it's going to interconnect in a way that other anthologies don't always have. And that interconnectivity really is really fun, and it really rewards repeat watching, I think. Yeah, and this is a movie that it's not only a tribute to the city of Oakland in the 80s, which is where like Ryan Fleck grew up, but it's a movie that really loves movies. Like you the influence of other movies, as well as just straight up direct references and name drops and conversations about movies, saturate the whole thing, and I can't help loving a movie that loves movies.
I completely agree. And from what I've heard, Ryan Fleck has been like sitting on this and wanting to put this out for a really long time.
Yeah, he's been pitching different versions of it to Anna basically since they met in the 90s.
And I think finally after their success from Captain Marvel, they finally got the opportunity to work on this passion project. And that's completely what this movie is it's a passion project. I am going to compare it a little bit to Sinners in that, like, these are two movies that are so full of personality that they couldn't be made by anybody other than the director of their respected films, right? Like, I hope to one day be able to put as much passion and care into something to put out into the world. It's so cool. It's like a, I hate doing this because we sort of talked about this off mic, but people are kind of comparing it to like a Tarantino, like Pulp Fiction. But in that, like, like a Tarantino film when you see one, I think this is like what it means to be like Ryan Fleck. Like, this is him to a core, I think. I think he kind of knows, th this is who he is. Like, he is like imbuing this movie with his DNA.
Yeah, could be. I mean, they've had a really long and extremely varied career. So I think it's definitely a little different than Tarantino, where it's like Tarantino, no matter what he makes. It's like it's just Tarantino. But something like Half Nelson, which was also a passion project for them, and they kept getting rejected they couldn't get financing for it, so they worked on the script so long that it finally they talk about that as like being the most perfect the movie ever could have been, and it got a lot of accolades, but vastly different movie. But yeah, I think if you're looking for like what formed Ryan Fleck as a person, probably like the stuff that he put into this movie, it's like
Absolutely.
a really good indicator of the influences for sure.
Absolutely. And so my first experience watching this movie was incredible because I got to see it at Panic Fest a couple weeks early. And the crowd was absolutely electric. Like, this is a crowd pleaser kind of movie. And from what you've told me, the crowds did not show up for this movie.
No,
Because
but
this,
the yeah.
yeah, this is a move, this is a cheerworthy movie. Like, this movie is a riot. Like, this is a fun time. This is like, it's so good. We'll get into like discussing more about it. But yeah, I think my review, go see it. Like, this is, if you love 80s stuff, you're gonna love this movie. If you love movies, you're gonna love this movie. If you love Pedro Pascal, if you hate Nazis, like, you're gonna love this movie. It kicks so much ass.
It is a lot of fun, and yeah, I'm really sad that where I live is not really a town that supports horror movies, because it's not just Freaky Tales. Literally, whenever I go to see a horror movie, there's maybe five other people there.
Yeah, and it's not an out and out horror movie. It's definitely a genre
No,
film.
but yeah, anything genre doesn't do well here.
I think if you're not a big horror fan, you still might like this.
Yeah, as long as you're okay with like
Blood.
pretty over like Tarantino levels of violence, let's say.
Yeah. But yeah, let's kind of get into it. Like let's get into start breaking the film down, talking spoilers. This is an anthology movie. There are four segments. Like let's break into the first one.
Yeah, so I mean, even before we get into our first chapter, we get a little opening crawl. We have a narrator for this film who does not intrude too much on the actual segments, but it's actually narrated by Oakland legend rapper Too Short, who is also the real Too Short is doing the narration here, but he's also a character in the movie. And the real Too Short also has a brief cameo in the movie. So he's all over the place. The movie's title, Freaky Tales, is actually a Too Short song. So, like, he's kind of essential to understanding the vibe of this movie for sure. And he talks about, like, you know, Oakland was like freaky in the 80s, stuff was in the air. He talks about like green, like something crazy with green lightning. And then he drops us into this ad for something called Cytopics.
And I actually got to hear from Ryan, I think, at Panic Fest, and that the green was 100% inspired by Reanimator, right? Like
Okay.
that color
Yeah.
specifically. So, and that the, I really something that stood out to me was that really cool. Like it's almost like a. Like I don't know, like a training video montage, like opening up, like it's got the cityscape and that really cool synth soundtrack right before Too Short starts narrating. The one thing that I did think was weird was that that we had a crawl, like a Star Wars-esque crawl, and then he still read it. I felt that
And
was
he
kind of
ad-libbed
odd.
part of it too, which was
Yeah.
funny too.
That was kind of funny. But yeah. So yeah, let's get on into that first segment, which was called Strength in Numbers, aka The Gilman Strikes Back, or as we liked to call it, Scott Pilgrim versus Skinheads.
Yeah, this segment kind of basically like briefest plot synopsis for it. When Nazis threaten alternative music venue 924 Gilman Street, the formerly pacifist punks decide to fight back.
And this is based on a true story, kinda.
It is, yeah. Yeah, so like I actually for half a second when he was talking about green stuff and it being set in like the Bay Area, and then immediately we're into like 924 Gilman Street being
You're
a central
thinking,
part of the first one, I was like, is
is
Green Day
Green
going
Day?
to show up?
That would have been
Because
cool.
I definitely was obsessed with Bay Area punk in high school, still love all of those like bands that came up in there. Sadly, Green Day does not appear, but we do get like a lot of references to Operation Ivy, which was a real band that played there. One of the founders of Operation Ivy, and also one of the like same guy who went on to found Rancid, Tim Armstrong, shows up later in the movie. Yeah, so we've got yeah, just this kind of fun group of punks.
Yeah, and this segment is shot in like a 16 millimeter style. It's got a really cool like it opens just like that, and then once they get to Gilman, like the club, it almost turns into a POV like through the club. It's really dope.
Yeah, and there's some fun animation that goes on in this segment too, which definitely makes it feel like Scott Pilgrim-y.
Absolutely.
Yeah, our two main kind of characters in this are Tina and Lucid, whose real name is Lewis, but he goes by Lucid. And Lucid is definitely styled like Matt Dillon in Rumblefish. Yeah, he's got like just the bandana and like the tank top cut off. Yeah, and a little bit of a mullet. They have a run-in with some of the skinheads. And then after the run, and then we're at the Gilman.
Yeah, and so it sort of like opens, and you see how diverse like this movie is, like just in the opening shot when they're
Yeah.
coming out of the Grand Lake movie palace, right? Like, and I actually wrote down what all of the movies that were showing.
Yeah, I've got those too.
What was it was? Well, they just came out of watching Lost Boys, right?
Yep.
So,
And we've got Ishtar, Raising Arizona, and Radio Days.
yeah. And so yeah, so when they get to the Gilman, there's that really cool, it's like sort of POV as they're going through the club, and then the skinheads attack. There's actually a really funny reference about the guy from Splash selling hot dogs at A's games, which will come back around in a little bit. So the skinheads attack, they tear the place up. I mean, everybody gets their asses handed to them, and so they, yeah. So Lucid and Tina go back to their place, and she kind of nurses them both back to health. And then they sort of gather the next day and figure out what are they going to do? Are they going to stand up for themselves, or are they just going to let these guys walk all over them?
Yeah, and ultimately they decide that even though they are pacifists, because the Nazis are not going to respect their rules of pacifism and kindness and inclusivity, that therefore they need to draw a hard line in the sand and say, no, you're not going to push us around. And so they arm themselves, they do this training montage.
Yeah, the rules don't apply to Nazis.
And yeah, so we got a really fun like montage of everybody training and also just coming up with these crazy weapons.
Yeah, there was a really funny line that one of the guys has about they sort of take a vote on if they're gonna fight, and he goes, "Oh, so I'm gonna be the only guy who won't fight Nazis." Well, fuck that. Like,
So it winds
so
up being unanimous.
yeah. And then yeah, so we get some more character moments of like the security guy who has never been in a fight in his life, is terrified, and the skinheads finally show back up, and it's full on the warriors, right? Like, it is just handmade weapons. And did you want to talk a little bit about the weapons, and maybe specifically the armband that Lucid made?
Yeah, Lucid makes this really crazy, like sharp spike bracelet for Tina, because in the initial beatdown that the Nazis gave to the punks, one of them actually stole her spike bracelet, and so Lucid makes her this like kind of upgraded version that's got just insane like 3-4 inch long spikes on it,
It's got
and it
like
also.
actual arrowheads and stuff, like
Yeah.
full on, like.
And it glows green
I
when she pulls it out of the box.
so I don't totally understand like the whole green thing and like what it affects. I think it's pretty like it can affect certain things.
So I think our best, like, I don't think it's necessary to think too hard about how it works. Basically, in that opening crawl, Too Short mentions, you know, that people had a lot of theories about what happens, but he kind of just felt like there was something in the air in 1987. And so, like, in every single segment during a pivotal moment, we see a flash of green lightning. So I think I like that's my kind of explanation is like there was just something going on. There's something in the air, and it kind of is something that meets people in moments where they need something to help them out.
So that works, except for one story, and that's story number three, and we'll get to that, I think, because there's a flash of green in the past.
I mean, it could have been going on in 1982. There's nothing that says it wasn't going on in 1980
Fair. That's fair.
since it's 7 years earlier.
Yeah. But yeah, this scene, it is, like we said, it is like a shot in 16 millimeter, and we get this really cool, like, the blood is clearly like an After Effects sort of thing, and it stands out. It's super cool. It's super striking, and kind of cheesy, but it's really fun. And yeah, the punks hold their ground, and they win their club back.
Well, and the best part with the blood too is like when Tina, she slashes kind of the lead guy in the neck with her wristband. And when she does that, the blood actually escapes onto the black bars on the side of that like 4-3 aspect ratio that we've got going on. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah, and we're getting, like you said, we're getting really cool, like Scott Pilgrim-esque animations and like Batman 66 like sound effects when people are getting punched. So actually, I wrote down the animation studio that did it. It's Crooked City. It's this very like punk-esque, like really dope cartoony style. It's really fun. And actually at the end we get like little caricatures of Lucid and Tina, and they push the aspect ratio out to full screen, to widescreen, and it's really, really kind of cool. It's a really cool transition. But then we move on into chapter two, which is
It is called Don't Fight the Feeling. I've been kind of calling it Thelma and Louise, but they don't die at the end.
That's good.
So kind of basic plot for this female hip hop duo Danger Zone. They go by the stage names of Entice and Barbie, dream of making it big and escaping sexual harassment and racism they face at their dead-end job scooping ice cream. Rapper Too Short gives them a shot at launching their career when he invites them to a rap battle.
Yeah, so this is we get sort of the same opening. They're coming out of the theater. They also just got done watching Lost Boys. The skinheads sort of are verbally attacking them, and that's sort of the inciting incident for the whole movie. And then yeah, they meet Lenny G, who says he's heard of them and would love to hear them perform at Two Shorts Club. We then cut to a scene where they're working together at an ice cream shop, and this is where we get to meet the wonderful. He's really good at playing this sort of role because he does it in Star Wars too, because he's a space Nazi in Star Wars. But yeah, we get Ben Mendelsohn coming in as like this super over the top, like microaggression cop. Like he's coming in, he's harassing these two girls, and I don't know, there was a really funny line where so he's in there, he's sort of bugging them and everything, and they make a joke about like, oh, you look like I know what you want, you want a vanilla ice cream cone or whatever. And so they kind of go through the jokes here, and then oh
So
yeah.
the guy in the shop, who basically he's just standing there awkwardly, kind of trying to ignore the extremely disgusting interaction going on with Ben Mendelsohn. He's just like averting his eyes all the while he's wearing a hat that says Jesse Jackson for President 1984. So what struck me about that was this man is like he's wearing this hat, basically declaring that he was there to support having an African American president, yet he is unwilling to step in and intervene in this incredibly awful racist thing that's going on right next to him because it makes him uncomfortable.
It's a
So
bit
he
virtue
is,
signal-y, yeah.
entirely performative, but he is not a true ally.
But yeah, and that, yeah, it's just like really disgusting, like just yeah. But yeah, so
And
he
like, he says, "Can we get some help?" And Barbie calls him out on it, and she's like, "Now
Now
you
you want our help?
want our help?"
Yeah, that was good. And then yeah, Ben Mendelsohn gets back to the car. He's got a black partner, like
And his black partner is played by Too Short.
yeah.
And his black partner is like, "Where's my Rocky Road?" And Ben Mendelsohn's like, "Oh, they were out of Rocky Road." And he's like, "They were out, and you didn't think to ask me if I wanted
Calls him a
something
bitch.
different." Yeah. And he's like,
Yeah.
"Nope." And he's like, "Bitch,"
What
which
a bitch.
was great.
Yeah.
I'm glad that he got a little bit of like pushback for that earlier on.
Yeah. And then we get a Cytopics conversation and like bench ad, which is really cool. So like that's sort of a through line through the whole anthology. And Barbie and Entice show up at Sweet Jimmy's, which is again another real club. So they are looking everywhere for Too Short. There's a basketball game with the Lakers and the Warriors going on, and they open the door and Too Short's going down on a woman, and they're like, "Oh," and there's a kind of a funny line where they're like, "Oh, we'll give him a minute, maybe two, maybe 10."
And then they realize, oh,
Oh, we were
they're
supposed to go
supposed to
over
go through
there.
the door at the end of the hall, and
Yeah.
that's the green room. They chat with Lenny G for a moment about like being ready, what's their take gonna be for the door. And you can tell Entice is a little nervous, whereas Barbie is like gung ho, ready to go. And then it's time to go up there. Entice takes a moment to kind of like center herself, and shows up right before basically they need to go up. We get rapper Simba is playing the younger version of Too Short, and he does a really good job, kind of emulating Short's like stance and swagger. And he's wearing a Raiders hat and an A's jacket, which I thought nice couple more like nods to Oakland. And he performs Freaky Tales to kind of open up the show. And then we go into the battle.
Well, so we th they didn't think they were there for a battle. They sort of get set up.
No, Lenny G tells them that he's like, "I think you all can hold your own with Short. So have something prepared for a battle when they meet."
Okay, 'cause I remember them saying
No,
that.
when she gets there, Entice is feeling insecure. So she's like, "They've set us up. They want us to fail at this battle," because she's not believing in herself. She doesn't think that they can actually match Short.
Gotcha. I see.
But it was planned as a battle from the beginning.
I thought it was planned that, oh, they were just going to come on stage and then he was surprising them with it's a battle against Too Short, which is okay. But yeah, and they knock it out of the park. I don't know if you wrote down any of their lines or anything.
I mean, no, because there's a lot, but man, they get some like
They get some really good digs.
their digs back at Short are really good. It was kind of fun to like read the history of like how, because this is an actual song too. It was never a live battle they performed. It was something they recorded for an album with Short. And basically, like in real life, what happened was like Too Short, he went and laid down his verses, and they were kind of like pretty tame, because he was like, "I'm like doing a battle with two teenage girls. I'm gonna like drop it down a notch." And the girls went in and laid down what they'd prepared, and
And
they went
just
super
blasted him.
like nasty, because they were like, "Well, this guy, he's
A
known
legend.
for his incredibly like misogynist and graphic lyrics, so like we're gonna like take him down." And then he went in and he like listened, and he's like, "Oh, that's how you're gonna play it. Okay." So then he goes back and he re-records his to be what we get performed in the movie, which is, they're really like going after each other, being like, he's like, "Oh, I know you want me," and they're like, "Player, please."
Yeah, that's great.
Basically is the entire vibe of the whole thing, and the crowd loves them. And Tice, like, she has this moment where she kind of does a false start. She's like not sure she can do it. And then she takes a breath. Barbie's like, we can do this. Believe in yourself. She like
The
is,
mic glows green.
yeah, she's gripping the mic. The mic starts to glow green and she goes into it and they kill it.
Yeah, they kill it. They get celebratory, like Too Short comes it, brings it in.
Yeah.
And then we get a lovely, lovely cameo as they are leaving the club and hop on the bus. And who is the bus driver
It
but
is
Marshawn
Marshawn
Lynch?
Lynch. I
Beast
was
mode
honestly
himself.
like, this is, I was like, really? They couldn't get him for more than like 5 minutes, apparently, to do a shot. I was like, that he should have had a little bit more because he's
Yeah.
so funny. I
I
feel like
love Marshawn Lynch. He is so much fun.
he's incredible. I kind of wish he had gotten some lines,
I
but
completely agree.
it was still nice just to see him there.
Yeah. It's nice to see him pop up and stuff. I didn't really care for Love Hurts all that much, but he was in that and he was pretty good in that. And he's great in Bottoms. Like Bottoms is great.
He
He's
is
so
so
funny
great
in
in
Bottoms.
Bottoms. Yeah.
But yeah, and then lightning strikes the bus and it flies away into the sky.
Right
Yeah.
after they get off the bus.
Yeah.
What they could have done with him, maybe to give him a little bit more screen time, is do like another. So, like, how they use Tim Armstrong as Tim Armstrong is in. Say Topic's actual client in one of their ads running in the green room during this. That would have been really funny to see Marshawn Lynch being like, I'm a Say Topic's actual client, and here's
That'd be
what it did
great.
for me.
Yeah. Or
But, you
just
know,
see him meditating. I think that'd be really funny.
it would have been so good. But you know what? We still got him in the movie. It's great.
Yeah. So let's get on into our third top or third segment, which was called Born to Mac, or as you were calling it,
Daddy Pedro and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. So, mob enforcer Clint, Pedro Pascal, is planning to do one last job before he retires to take care of his wife and unborn child. When everything goes horribly wrong, Clint must decide what kind of man he wants to be.
and this is maybe the most Tarantino-esque segment, I think. Very, very movie focused, very lot of references to movies, and he's a hitman and he's in a diner, and it feels very
It does. So Clint and his wife are sitting in their car in front of the video store, kind of debating, okay, what are they going to rent? His wife wants to watch Sid and Nancy, because
Which
she,
relates back to the first segment being very
with the
punk.
punk. And Clint is like, not really into that. He suggests the Money Pit, which is where we get our second reference to Tom Hanks. Clint's like, I once shook that guy down after an A's game. And
Yeah.
The Money Pit starred Tom Hanks, who is an Oakland legend. And finally, he's like, all right, I'll pick something good. He goes into the store, and who is the clerk in the store?
But Tom Hanks.
And he is doing one of his crankiest, finest performances of all time. I was like, he's such a delight. He's
Absolutely.
so
And
funny.
you hear him before you see him, and you don't realize how recognizable the Tom Hanks voice is until you're like, I know who that is. That's Tom Hanks. Ah. So yeah, and there's an Enter the Dragon poster right behind him, which will come into play in the next segment.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of reference to Bruce Lee, I would say, in this movie overall, among other things. There's also a Willie Dynamite poster and a Night of the Living Dead poster. So some fun ones. There was one more that I could never quite see all of it underneath the Night of the Living Dead one, but I think it was another zombie movie.
Okay. I cannot wait to own this movie
Yeah,
and
there's
just
so
pick.
many things that I want to like just pause it so I can read the whole thing.
I want to go through like frame by frame and just look at all the movies that are on the shelf at the video store. But yeah, so Pedro Pascal or Clint gets into a conversation with a video clerk, which, we don't get those conversations anymore because we have Netflix now. That's kind of what this podcast is for, So we get to have those fun conversations. But Tom Hanks starts going down his the top five underdog movies, right? So, which surprisingly, it's not number one, but number five is Rocky.
And number four is Hoosiers, and we get our first reference to David Lynch's Blue Velvet, which was it's delightful. You get two references to this movie, and this one is he's like, Dennis Hopper had a great year with Hoosiers and Blue Velvet.
Then coming in at number three, we have The Dirty Dozen. Underdogs killing Nazis works on so many levels. Again, sort of a metatextual reference to the first segment of the movie.
Well, and also, okay, so we didn't mention it, but there is a line between Lenny G and Tice in segment two that made me laugh, where it was like, how do we go from Black Panthers to skinheads running around this town? It's 1987. You'd think people would know it wasn't cool to be a Nazi. And so it's kind of like this is a running theme. Also, this idea of underdogs, definitely a running theme in this movie.
Spoiler alert, it's 2025. People still don't know.
Exactly, which was part of why that line made me laugh so hard. So I was like, ooh, timely.
And then number two, I actually have never seen, but it is The Verdict.
Yeah, I've never seen that one either. So yeah, I'm interested to check that one out.
And we're kind of left hanging with number one, right?
He quotes the Roger Ebert review of this movie.
Movies like this are hardly ever made at all. When they're made this well, they're precious cinematic miracles. Roger Ebert on Breaking Away, apparently the number one underdog movie. Also a movie I've never seen. I hadn't even heard of it.
Yeah, me either.
So I think it was a late 70s movie.
Probably. Yeah, I think the review was from 1979, so and then we get another list of movies, but this list of movies is Clint basically giving the clerk the password to get into an underground poker game. I was writing furiously at this point because there were so many references. So the only one that like remained in my brain was the final movie, which is The Color of Money. But that is another thing that I intend to like basically write down in detail and make another list.
Another line that I really liked that Tom Hanks utters is, "I'm trying to provide you with an experience," basically playing this game with him and not telling him what the number one is. And so yeah, he gets into the back and gets given these poker chips and led into the back room.
And
Hang
while
on.
he before he sorry, just before he goes to the game, there is something
This
kind of pertinent.
I know. I've got it right here. And then yeah, over so you overhear as he's walking away, Tom Hanks is talking to somebody who is trying to order scanners. Or they're trying to order something else, and then he says, "Oh, you should try scanners."
It's basically the same thing. Which is it's just very sarcastic and funny. But yeah. But yeah,
And so
scanners gonna become a motif for this movie.
yes. And in the back room where they're playing poker, we get a His Girl Friday poster,
We did.
which I recognized because we talked about it on our proto episode, right?
Yes, we
For Hard
did.
Eyes. But yeah, so he's shaking down this guy who's gambling away the money that he's owed. And has to break a couple fingers. There's
Yeah, he's
some.
like the nicest mob enforcer of all time because he's like, are you okay to drive? Go to the hospital.
the guy offers him courtside tickets to the Warriors Lakers game. And then, Pedro breaks the guy's finger, leaves, tells him he's done. He's done with the mob life, the hitman life. He's going clean after this. And then he starts to walk out, turns around, grabs a movie.
Oh, before that,
Oh,
though.
yeah, go ahead.
'Cause he's like, he wants to know what that last movie on the underdog list is. So he's like, hey, where's the other guy? 'Cause it's a different clerk. And this clerk is like, what other clerk? And he's like, I'm the only one who's been here all day. And Clint's like, I don't
Maybe
know,
he's
maybe
the
he's the
owner.
owner. And he's like, but you're
You've
the owner, sir. You've
always
always
been
been the
the
owner.
owner.
And it's such a nice little reference to The Shining. Like, he's totally mess. He's like, I'm just
I'm
messing
just
with
fucking
you.
with you. He's on break. That's Hank.
That's Hank. He's a character.
And then we see somebody in the background who has glowing green eyes.
And he is intensely staring at Clint.
And Pedro starts to get a bloody nose. And then, so he grabs a movie and leaves. Turns out he's a great husband. He grabbed Sid and Nancy. And not
And
only
he,
that, but he bought it.
yeah. And he paid 1980s money for that VHS, which is like, yeah, movies used to be crazy expensive, guys. This
I want to
cost
look.
him $90.
$90, that's insane. Those are Disney Steelbook prices now.
Basically.
Yeah, I think they're like 60. It's ridiculous. No special features. Not for me. He gets Sid and Nancy, and then we see the guy who was in the store is holding a gun on them outside of their car. And we get a flashback then, right?
And it feels very Frank Miller, like where everything's in black and
Black and white
white.
except for the
The
blood.
only color is, yeah, the blood. And Pedro is beating this guy's dad to death.
I know you're a big Frank Miller fan.
Yeah, sure. I am not.
No, I know.
Let's put it this way. If Zack Snyder likes it, I probably don't.
That's fair. But yeah, so yeah, we get there's this really awesome, like kind of a cool line where Pedro's like, "Look, man, I'm not that guy anymore." Like his wife is pregnant, like they're going in for a checkup, I think. And the guy's just like, "I don't care." And it's just like so like piercing. Like he's just like he has spent his whole sev the past 7 years just growing up to hate this guy, and like cannot see that he's a human and that he's sorry and that he's trying to better himself, but that he's essentially just doing what Pedro did to him. Like, so just sort of, creating that cycle again and again and again. And then we hear a gunshot, and it turns out that his wife pulled a gun. However, she wasn't quick enough and got shot herself.
So we definitely hear two shots. It kind of like bang bangs. So we know that both guns have gone off. As soon as we turn and see that she is holding a gun, it's like, oh, where did his bullet go? And she has this heartbreaking line where she says, don't watch it without me, referencing Sid and Nancy. And then he realizes that
She's
there
been
is
shot.
blood pouring out of her. She has been shot. So he basically rushes her to the hospital. And then we pick back up with him at a diner.
He drops her off and then leaves.
And he's like, who knows what he's done in the interim, but he calls the hospital to get a checkup, and
She's
the
gone.
doctor tells her, yeah, she didn't make it. The baby is in NICU. It doesn't look good. And so Clint has nothing left to live for, and he walks into the diner, and he walks past two people we have already seen. It's Tina and Lucid. And he goes and he sits down with this shady dude and they start having a conversation. Clint wants payment. The guy's like, here, you can have an advance, but you got to do one more job with me and the guys.
Turns out Pedro's been working for the Nazis. Poor Pedro. Come on, Pedro. You know better than that.
And he's like, yeah, you gotta come help me do this job. It's the basketball guys. And that is kind of all the information we get on this job. Pedro's like, nope, I have nothing left to live for. Like, the man can come and get me, or the guy can come and get me, but like, I'm not doing this anymore. Like, I deserve to be like, put through pain. I've caused a lot of people a lot of pain. He starts walking out and then he like stops by Tina and Lucid's table because he has noticed the spike
Gauntlet.
bracelet and he's like, can I see it? What's it for? And they're like, yeah,
Nazis.
it's for Nazis. And he's like,
Aim for the
cool.
neck.
Aim for the neck, which we're like, aw, sick. So, because that ties back into when Tina takes out the main guy with a hit to the neck. So, it's a nice little tie-in. It doesn't feel overly done for sure. It feels pretty natural. And he goes out, sits in his car.
Gets ready to kill himself, like he's ready to end it. And then a kid comes up asking him to buy a
A mixed.
mixtape of
East Bay music. This is one of the things that I need to pause it and actually look at the songs. I'm pretty sure I got down most of the artists that the kid mentions, but I didn't get all of the songs. I know that probably some of these songs are the ones that are on the soundtrack, because most of these artists are actually featured on the soundtrack. So we've got Too Short, Richie Rich, Sly and the Family Stone, Tower of Power, the Pointer Sisters, Sheila E. And then he's like, if you're like a rock guy, Operation Ivy and
And
Metallica.
Metallica, yeah. So we'll get to Metallica in a little bit.
But Pedro, he like, I don't know what it is about this kid, but he's like, you know what? Here's these Laker tickets. I'll take the tape. And he pops the tape in.
And then he kind of gives this really actually that's a little later, but he gives a speech about how he's an underdog and he's just wanting to get out from under himself, whether it be a hitman doing one last job or a kid trying to sell his way out of the hood.
And he gives that speech because basically, right after he pops in the mixtape, a couple cops show up and they're like, hey, we gotta get you to come ID a suspect. So, and he's talking about like this underdog has seen his last day.
And
And then we
so
get to the station.
we get to the station, and who is there but Ben Mendelsohn?
And we realize through a phone conversation, and kind of it's not explicitly stated. It's literally just the two of them, the way they act with each other.
And Mendelsohn doesn't hardly utter a line. Like he's just looking
No.
at him. It's really great, like scene
It's
chewing.
it really is. The two of them, it's like, oh, these two know each other. There's something sinister between them.
We find out he's the guy.
Because the phone call that Clint gets at Ben Mendelsohn's desk is from the doctor, and he's like, your daughter's alive, she's gonna make it. Clint's kind of like, ah, oh, fuck. And he like
And just this sinister, like, guess you
he
do have
hangs
something
up.
to live for.
And so it's like, oh no, I guess it's on. He goes back to look at the lineup of guys. And we get this just really beautiful moment where he's looking at, because they have in fact
The
rounded up
cops
the,
know who he is.
yeah, they know that this is the guy that shot Clint's wife. And Clint is looking at this kid. The kid starts to cry.
A
And Clint
green
is
tear.
looking at him. And he kind of like flashes back to when he killed this kid's dad and he saw him as a crying child. And he has to decide, am I going to repeat the cycle of revenge or am I going to end it here?
Yeah, and that's where I think it like kind of breaks the immersion of like the green thing, because he has a green tear in the flashback as well.
Only
Which is
if you
like,
believe that the green stuff was only happening in 1987.
eh. I mean, they don't really like they sort of they talk about it being like 87, like that year specifically, but yeah, it's I mean it's pretty like just eh.
It doesn't break the
We
movie
don't
for me.
set the rules up all that well, so it's
No.
okay.
It's a metaphor. It doesn't need to be
No.
perfect real world sense.
No.
Yeah. And Clint makes the decision. He is not going to put this kid behind bars. He's not going to be the one to continue this cycle of revenge. He says, it's not the guy. He walks out. He's like, I'm going to pick a different day to die. I'm going to go meet my daughter.
Because Bethany, you know what these are?
Oh, yeah. Well, they weren't fists of fury anymore, which was our. It's what he said to his wife right before she got shot. He's like, you know what this is? And she's like,
She
a
said, a
fist of
fist of
fury.
fury?
And he's
Yeah.
like, not anymore. It's
Not
just a
anymore. Just a
hand.
hand.
And that was our second reference to good old Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, then let's move on into our fourth and final segment, The Legend of Sleepy Floyd. Or as I was calling it, some motherfuckers always trying to shoot baskets uphill.
Yep. While Eric Sleepy Floyd is playing a record-setting game for the Golden State Warriors, his family is attacked during a botched robbery. Sleepy draws upon for powerful forces within and goes on a revenge mission, hell-bent on bringing down the men responsible.
First things
S
first. Oh, sorry. First things first, rest in peace, Angus Cloud. Which I actually thought Abigail was his last movie, but it turns out it's
Okay.
this one.
Yeah.
And it was really weird at the credits when they show everybody, and I like he pops up and I cheered, and like nobody around me was like, I was like, oh shit. I just cheered for a Nazi. But yeah, like I was just like, oh yeah, like you know. He's gone, and so they do give him a tribute toward at the very end, which
Yeah.
is nice. But yeah, so this scene is by far my favorite. It's so cool. It's Bruce Lee, it's Blade,
It's Kill Bill.
Kill Bill.
Yeah.
It's so rad.
The Last Dragon is another good touch point for this, for
Yeah.
sure. Yeah, so
We get this lovely scene of Angus Cloud reading off stats to Ben Mendelsohn,
yeah.
and
And
Ben
fun
Mendelsohn,
fact.
there's
Fun
the fun
fact.
facts. There's always just a fun fact, and
Yeah.
one time Ben Mendelsohn goes, "What's wrong with these teams? Why can't they ever pick a white guy?" Like again, like that, just that, like those microaggressions of like,
Yeah.
oh, and then. His son and the skinheads are sort of rallying and going, and they run off. They get a car. Basically, this kid actually said, or his son actually says, like they're going to beat up some
Yeah.
people. I'm not going to
Slur
say the
word.
word.
Slur word.
They're going to go beat up some slurs at a punk club, and you know, he tosses them the keys and says, "Good kids, fine people." I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, anybody else delivering some of the lines that Ben Mendo delivers,
Yeah.
they wouldn't be nearly as funny or weirdly charming, which, take that however you will. It's like, wow, you're a charming racist, sort of.
Yeah.
But
And absolutely, like
it also incredibly terrifying.
yeah, absolutely. It's all about the delivery and like that. It's a carrot. Like I'm not a plot. Like I'm not applauding the things that he's saying, but I do
Yeah.
think like the writing of it is pretty funny.
Yeah. And honestly, he's such a good actor. Like, yeah, he really gives this character a lot of menace. Which, even him being kind of mildly charming, I think is kind of true to life, where it's like, well, people aren't just one thing. And it's so sinister when somebody who is this just hateful is also kind of charming. And that's the scary thing about some of this like really hateful behavior. But yeah, so that kind of like ties in. We're like, oh, okay, so the guy's like Ben Mendo's son is our head Nazi. And we start putting the pieces together, and also this game that has been kind of in the background playing in all the other in all the other segments. That's this game that Sleepy's playing for the first kind of bit of the fourth segment.
And so basically the Ben Mendelsohn, his whole plan is we're gonna break into their house while they're at the game and steal whatever they've got. And again, there's a funny line where they even break into the white guy's home.
And they're like, they're not supposed to. Ben Mendo's like, I take him on the off the list. And then
Some and it, I think the line that Too Short utters is like, they must not have gotten the memo.
I think they did something really smart here with like showing the basketball game, and the way they do it is through animation.
Yeah, it's really cool. I think part of it
It's
was a cost-cutting measure for sure.
exactly. That was what I was going to say is like I think it's a really smart way to kind of manage your budget, because a scene like that would have required just a ton of extras, a ton of choreography, like so many setups, because shooting sports is just it's very complicated. And so if you can have an animator do the same thing for you, it's cheaper, but it's also an interesting way to add sort of a different artistic flair to it. It's a way to use your limitations to make a project stronger.
Yeah, and I think it makes it stand out because while that the basketball game is integral to the plot of the movie, it's not necessary that we're watching the game.
And
So.
also, because this section is called The Legend of Sleepy Floyd, it almost feels like, because this
Like
is
a
like this
story.
legendary thing, it really does give it that kind of like, this is an epic tale. And you know, the cool thing about this game is that this is a real game that happened. Sleepy Floyd really did set the record for most points in a quarter, and that record still stands today. Like, the man had just a phenomenal game, and it's really cool to kind of see it mythologized in this way.
Yeah, it's really cool. And yeah, like I said, it's 2D animation. It's really cool. And so yeah, we get I think they go out to five different houses, right?
Eight,
Eight different houses. And but we're gonna focus only on Sleepy Floyd because that's what's important. So they start trying to break in. And he apparently is a collector of ancient antiquities. And so they break into his house and are trying to get through his vault. But turns out his mother and siblings were at the game.
And his
Yeah, and
girlfriend.
his girlfriend, his mother, was it his brother and his girlfriend? Yeah, his mother, his brother, and his girlfriend were at the game. But his mom, who was formerly vegan and who had tried, who it, there was a line that Too Short utters about it being it being hard in a small town to be vegan
In
and
1988
in
or in
1987
1987, to
and
be,
she and so she ate one too many hot dogs at the game and got sick to her stomach, and so they go home and interrupt the burglary, and the Nazi or the guys just, you know, they get startled and they shoot him and run away. So they're unable to break into the vault. They run off. Sleepy wins the game through, you know, something in the water, some green mystical energy.
The lightning strikes the stadium during the game. We see that happen, and then after like he goes and celebrates at one of the local burger joints, Too Short is there. The Danger Zone girls are there. They're all having a big party
The real
celebrating.
Sleepy Floyd is there.
As a Sleepy fan, which was just very
It's
funny.
pretty funny. And so they roll back up home. They actually get they get the mom a veggie burger, right? And So they pull up, cops are there. So they go in. Yeah.
And his brother was shot. His mother fainted, and then the girlfriend died on the scene. So,
And
like,
so yeah, he's sitting at home, stressing, figuring out like what to do. And he gets a call from the punk kid. He gets a call from Tina, and saying that she knows who did it, and
Yeah,
basically says,
because she and Lucid did some Blue Velvet mystery type shit, is the line.
yeah.
Because, like, during their segment, we didn't talk about it earlier, but, like, there's this little, like, plant where she's talking about trailing people and following them. And she's like, didn't you ever, like, follow anybody? And it turns out that Tina and Lucid, when they were at the diner, they overheard Clint's conversation with the other guy about, like, something about the basketball guys. And they were like, you know what? Let's just follow this guy for fun and see where he goes.
Yeah, and obviously it's a
And
big news story.
So they follow the dude back to his house. And then later on, they hear the news that Sleepy Floyd's place has been burgled and his girlfriend was shot. So they realize, oh, that guy we tailed is probably in on it. So they give Sleepy the address that they followed the guy to.
Yeah, so Sleepy says, everybody go home. And he goes into his secret dojo. And,
And he does some meditation.
yep. And
And
we get this awesome, like, suit up montage as he's throwing on this yellow leather jacket. He's got a black leather trench coat over top of it. And he's just knives everywhere. And hatchets and all this. It's so, I mean, it's Blade. Like,
Yeah, it's
it's
Blade. The yellow is definitely a nod to Bruce Lee's yellow jumpsuit in Game of Death, which was also referenced in Kill Bill.
And he's got
It's
it
just that very particular shade of yellow.
and he's got his Warriors warm-up pants on
Yeah, and jacket too. The
and
jacket
jacket.
is
yeah
over the vest, under the trench coat.
yeah
Layers, they're very important.
yeah And he hops on a motorcycle, and again, full Blade, like, motorcycle driving, through the hills. And while he's driving, we see three lightning strikes indicating the other three stories, obviously. And he shows up, and this scene is just so cool. I don't even know what to say about it other than, like, he just wrecks fools. And, like, people were hooting and hollering, cheering. Joe Lynch, I mean, he just, fuck yeah, like, he was like, it was just great. Like, it was so much fun.
And this scene, it starts with the needle drop of For Whom the Bell Tolls by Metallica, which is just, it's utterly perfect.
And I'm not a big Metallica fan, but, like, never have I seen a Metallica needle drop work better than this scene. Like,
It's so good.
it killed.
And then we move into some E40, and then we do some Yarbrough and the Peoples before the synth score just kind of kicks in again, and it takes us to the end of this fight sequence. And yeah, it's difficult to describe beat by beat. Just know that he basically just takes out everybody, and it's
In the
awesome.
coolest ways possible.
It's very cool. He
Angus
makes
Cl
his
Angus Cloud gets a hatchet to the head.
He runs into Ben Mendelsohn's office and he's like, Sleepy Floyd's out there killing people. And Ben Mendelsohn's like, who is?
Who?
And he's like, Eric Sleepy Floyd, we like robbed him tonight. And then he's like, what should I do? And Ben Mendelsohn has a great line where he's like, you know, Travis, you killed the man's family. So you don't get to decide when he comes for you. You're on his timeline now. And so he's kind of pissed that Sleepy's there killing his crew, but he's also like, I kind of get it. So they decide they're gonna like go out there with guns to take out Sleepy Floyd. Travis opens the door and gets the hatchet to
Yeah.
the
It's do I love a
head.
hatchet in a movie. I feel like there need to be more hatchets.
That scene is also great, 'cause like when he opens the door, Sleepy's there with the hatchet in one hand and the head of the other guy who was in the house robbing him, and he just kind of like drops it to the ground and throws the hatchet. Then Ben Mendo like goes out with a sawed-off shotgun, and he's like, "Oh, I'm gonna kill him now."
Makes a joke about where's Dopey and Sneezy.
Yeah, are they hiding in a closet? Because he does not believe that one dude could have done this all by himself. And so, okay, I'm going to see if you agree with my read on this, because I'm fairly certain that what this is a tulpa. Because Sleepy, we flash back to him in his little
Layer.
dojo with his eyes closed. And then we flash back to him in the exact same position. And he opens his eyes and his eyes glow green. So I think that, like, yes, there is a physical representation of Sleepy that has gone out and done all of this carnage, but technically the actual physical body of actual
Is at
Sleepy
home.
has stayed at home the whole time.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Because especially with like the final, like when we go into the final Side Topics ad. He says, you can learn how to infiltrate and destroy your enemies from the comfort of your own mind. Yeah. Okay, cool. I just like, yeah.
Absolutely.
That made, like, it was great.
And we get the scanners payoff.
Yeah. Yeah. Our second scanners are like,
But this is like the full
because,
payoff. Like
yeah.
we got a little hint of it, but this is like
Yeah.
we went full scanners and we got to see
Yeah.
Ben Mendo
Ben
go
Mendelsohn.
boom.
Yeah. Full body. Blows up, nasty, it's everywhere. And we didn't mention it, but in Ben Mendo's office, he's got Clint tied up, beaten, and apparently unconscious, and he's got the
The
baby
baby,
there as well. And the he's like, yeah, I'm gonna kill him and keep this baby is kind of like what's inferred, basically. Yeah. But yeah, so Ben Mendo, he's dead. Woo.
Boo,
And
end of movie
yeah.
and credits,
Clint picks up the hatchet in one arm. He picks up his baby in the other arm. And he walks slowly out past all these dead bodies, opens the door, and who is there
The son
but
holding his neck.
yeah, the extremely beat up and tail between their legs Nazi kids are back. And the kid is like, what happened here? And Pedro
Your
says,
dad fucked with the wrong warrior.
yep. And he leaves, he rides off into the sunset. And then we get kind of like the same CyTopics ad we got at the beginning of the movie, but with a few slightly altered lines, and now we actually know who the other people in it are. We're like, oh, that's Lucid, that's Tina, that's the mixtape kid, that's Sleepy's mom. You know, like it's fun to just kind of get that little bit of extra context. And then he like ends it with, if you're a Nazi, what is it? If you're a Nazi something,
Oh, I wish
CyTopics will blow your, oh no, you're not, yeah, he's like, everyone's welcome except for Nazis, basically is what he says. And then he ends it with, CyTopics will blow your mind. And we cut to a head exploding. So that is our third Scanners homage. And then we go credits. We get a nice little, like, everybody call sheet. And then we launch into a Danger Zone music video.
And so this actually this is what Tom Hanks was supposed to be there for, was just going to be in the
Okay.
dance scene.
Oh yeah, and he gets we see a little cut extra cut of him, like a cut line from him at the video store too. Yeah,
So, but
okay.
he was only supposed to shoot the dance sequence, but they were
Okay.
like, we have
Yeah.
Tom Hanks. We have to have something else for him. Like, he can't just be in the dance scene.
Nice. Yeah, it's so great. We get him talking about like Raiders of the Lost Ark in the like the
He
little
said,
cut.
of course, we got Raiders of the Lost Ark. I've got
I've got like
15
five
copies.
copies.
Five
Yeah.
copies. But
Yeah.
yeah, it and then yeah. That's the movie.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of moving pieces, a lot of parts to it. And yeah, having seen it 3 times now, I would say it is more fun every time because I notice something new every time. And there's no way I've caught everything, you know?
I personally don't care what medium this movie releases on, as long as it has a commentary track from the directors. Like, that's all I want.
Yeah, that would be really, really great. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to owning it and being able to pause and rewind.
A steelbook would be cool, but I don't know if it's going to get one.
Yeah, it's Lionsgate, so
It might get a lot. It might
they're
get a
pretty
Lionsgate
good
Limited,
with
yeah.
they're pretty good with physical releases as far as distributors go.
And they have their own website that they like release, like I get, yeah. So yeah, I fingers crossed. I doubt that it'll get a steelbook, but it'd be really cool. I'd really like a purple and neon green steelbook. I think it'd be really
Yeah, that'd be
cool.
sick.
But yeah, so yeah, that's the movie. What about some Letterboxd reviews?
So, I mean, not everybody loved this movie,
They're wrong. They are
but
absolutely wrong.
yeah, like, I'm not gonna read any bummer reviews because that's just not fun for me. If people were criticizing it, they felt like the writing was a little weak. I disagree. I think this is actually a really well-written movie, and that if you appreciate intertextuality in a movie, you will really appreciate this. So Miles Foster, in their 4-star review, said, "Never kill yourself. Some cool kid could hand you a mixtape." L. Yarson said, in their 3.5-star review, "Who let Marshawn Lynch drive the bus?" Benji Gottfried said in their 4-star review, "Jay Ellis as Sleepy Floyd is something I never knew I needed. I cannot believe this is the last time we are ever going to see Angus Cloud in anything. He was gone way too soon and had potential to be really good."
Absolutely.
Jason Alley said in their 5-star review, "A movie doesn't have to be perfect to be perfect. And sometimes you just know when you're watching a movie that's going to become one of your all-time favorites," which is absolutely how I feel about
That's
this.
a perfect way to end it, I think. So, what are you looking forward to in the coming weeks?
Let's see. I mean,
We
I
got
don't
Until
have.
Dawn coming out next weekend.
Yeah, I gotta book some more tickets. I don't have anything booked currently, but yeah, booking Until Dawn. Hopefully gonna see Sinners this week, 'cause my weekend just was like, I had a really busy week at work and just kind of felt like not going out and doing things as much this weekend, so I haven't. Getting some feedback on my script, and then I am submitting it to Final Draft's Big Break, just because I want some professional feedback on it. And yeah, I have some stuff pre-ordered that won't be here until probably June. But those will be fun things to see in the horror halls eventually.
Did you see that really cool Small Soldiers steelbook?
No, Small Soldiers is one of those ones where I might be too old for it.
Okay.
It's definitely not a part of
Yeah.
my growing up experience.
It's Joe Dante. I mean, it's really good. Maybe give it a revisit. It's really good.
Oh, I've never seen it.
Oh, okay. Well, then
No.
definitely.
Like, it legitimately is not a part of my growing up experience. So,
Cool. I might
yeah.
have to make
But
you watch that for the
I do
podcast.
love Joe Dante.
Yeah,
So,
I might have to make you
yeah.
watch that for the podcast. But yeah, as far as me, yeah, we've got I'm definitely going to go see Sinners at least one more time, if not seven. Until Dawn is coming out next weekend, or this weekend technically for the listeners. Friday night, they will Screenland will be showing Popcorn, which will be a first time watch for me.
Nice. Oh, it's so good.
Hopefully I don't fall asleep during that one. I've been pretty sleepy lately. Yeah, that's the new Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. Finally ordered it, so it should be coming sometime in the next couple weeks. I'm very excited to play that. But yeah, other than that, that's about it for me. Bethany, where can the lovely people find you?
I am Bethany Laurel on Blue Sky and Letterboxd, and I am the Bethany Laurel on Instagram.
You can find us on Twitter, Threads, Blue Sky, Instagram, and Facebook at Horror Hero Pod. You can also follow us as we try to post more on TikTok. Have any questions that you want answered? Email us at horrorheropod@gmail.com. And please leave us a review. Thanks for listening, guys. I've been Jonathan.
And I'm Bethany.
And she is the Elle Woods to my Jake Blues. And
We
we hate
hate
Illinois
Illinois Nazis.
Nazis. Have a great week, guys.
Have a good one. Bye.
She's dead, wrapped in plastic.
Yeah, truly amazing.